have to talk very on the strategy. The presentation is confined to that. Maybe to some extent we will talk about some of the work in progress, but last we were just talking about the strategy. Strategy in brief is meant to ensure that you've got appropriate health technology and that it is fully functional and poses minimal risk to patients, and we also recognize the systemic inefficiencies and associated wastage, and the strategy is meant to address those. In a nutshell, basically it is to ensure that health technology is available as and when required and where required, regardless of where you are, whether you are in the rural areas or urban areas. We've divided it into five major areas. It addresses issues of planning, because if we are saying we need to make sure that you've got appropriate technology and that is available, we obviously need to plan. We've got wide range of technologies, and therefore we need to plan and optimize. That is grouped under strategic objective one, which we said it is promoting of equity in access and distribution. Then we are saying, as I said, if you are in the rural area, whether you're in Bokop, Maitalin, or Shelly, you should still have access to the same level of care and technology as somebody in Cape Town or Johannesburg access. The next one is reduction of the unnecessarily high cost. Health technology by itself is expensive, but we need to look at the unnecessary part of it, because it doesn't always have to be expensive. We also, in strategic objective 3, we look at ensuring safety and efficacy. That is grouped under health technology asset management. Strategic objective number 4, it addresses issues of evidence-based health technology assessment, is what it is called, and it looks at ensuring appropriate introduction of technologies and appropriate adoption and continued use of health technology. And lastly, we address issues of health technology regulation, and all of that has to be underpinned by a vigorous capacity building trial. Because part of one of the major challenges is lack of capacity, which leads to some of the challenges we will be seeing that I'm going to present. And within that, we also address government structure. Now, what is health technology? It's got a very broad definition. It includes devices, it includes drugs, it includes medical and surgical procedures, the knowledge associated with this. As you will see in the definition, but we have specifically focused on medical devices, so the entire strategy deals with them, and to the extent that some of the areas listed here or affect medical devices, then we will address them, but the strategy is focusing on medical devices. Now, if we look at some of the challenges, the first strategic objective I referred to, which I address, is planning. Some of the challenges we have there, we've got poor planning, in fact, the poor planning systems or mechanisms, and this disjointed and chaotic equipment infrastructure. By that I'm saying, we find that the equipment that is required, where it is required, is not in place, whereas in the very same place, you may have very high-tech and expensive equipment, which is sometimes not being used. So there's definitely a challenge. And then there's no rational basis and mechanism for this replacement and procurement of technology. It's largely safety-driven, and I'm sure we all agree that in any hospital, yes, to some extent, they will look at the need, but it depends on who is influenced by who, wherever it's, and we will find these people going to various hospitals and selling a particular equipment, and as a result, we introduce it without necessarily having a proper mechanism to say this is what is essential, this is what you need. But so that's how our acquisition sometimes and procurement happens. We've got high technology equipment, we dialysis machines. You look at us with this profile, how many dialysis machines should you have per population? Obviously, we will all agree that we cannot just adopt international norms, because in some instances, I remember when to Japan, there are many dialysis machines, just about every hospital had about 6 or 7 or 10 per hospital. In our situation, that may not necessarily be the case. But with them, when we investigated further, probed further, they said no, because transplant for them is not such an accepted idea in their country. So then they dialyze a lot, and the situation could be different. Same could be applicable to say MRI. How many MRIs must you have per population? As I said, regardless of whether it's in the rural area or urban area, where or how do you deploy technology? We also look at developing a national health technology plan. We have to look at distribution patterns for both public and private sector. You would find, currently, we find a situation where with specification of technology, maybe even within the same city, where we could actually say, this is what this particular population requires. It could, yes, be in the private sector, or it could be in the public sector, but maybe it actually opens possibilities for PPP, public-private partnerships. We also look at building capacity. We need to develop health technology planners, health technology economists, or health economists general that focus on health technology planning, the issues around health technology assessment. We also need to develop an invention, a health technology inventory. Currently, we do not have an asset or asset register. We don't have an inventory. Therefore, do not even know what technologies we have in the country. And the strategy is meant to address that. Also looking at the distribution patterns, we just hear that, okay, housing has got 2 health scans, but do they really have, do we know? I'm just saying, well, we may know, but I'm just saying general. At some level, we need to know what we have so that we are sure that people have quickly access. We also need to develop relevant health technology packages, essential equipment lists. You remember I said you need to be able to determine the need, and how do you determine the need if you cannot compare with what is essential and what you have. The intervention currently, I just said I'll talk broadly about what is being done or what impact we have used as a critical success factor. We will soon be looking at developing these norms and standards and HCP distribution. But we also are currently working and trying to build capacity in conducting a comprehensive health technology audit. HT audit here will not necessarily mean counting and knowing what equipment you have, but it also requires you to indicate the status of that equipment, because you may have it. But if it's not working, if you don't know whether it's working to the level it should, you cannot really tell whether it's got that or not. That will, as I said, also deal with issues of HT functionality. But also we need to do an equipment age analysis. We do have equipment, but we don't know how old it is, and as a result, we may not necessarily know when we need to start phasing it out, when we need to start planning. We could be saying maybe in the next 3 years we should be replacing so many of these equipment. We should also assist with our acquisition and the distribution pattern which I've spoken about. And then I spoke about building capacity. We've already started or trying to build it now, currently working with funding the technology. And multidisciplinary HT planning committees that we established. We currently have a ministerial advisor committee on health technology which has just been appointed. And it will have some of those subcommittees. It is a multidisciplinary committee. I said I'll just show you briefly some of the challenges we have. If you look at this picture, we've got this machine with an audit we've done. We've got this fluoroscopic machine, which was worth $78,000 then. The very same hospital didn't have oxygen tanks, didn't have shock containers. And those are the things that the strategy is now trying to respond to. In the second category, which is strategy, school spoke of health technology and acquisition. There we do not have an ability to determine health technology costs like that. Currently, we don't know how much the equipment is when it leaves the factory and when it is finally purchased and procured in our hospital. We don't know what the cost drivers are along the way, whether it's shipping and so forth, because people are trying to reduce the systemic inefficiency. Those are some of the things we would need to look into. We therefore need to do a value chain analysis on this. We've got fragmented medical device acquisition, poor control. We do not have, as I said, issues of asset registers. If we do not know, if we cannot account for equipment that we have, how do we even begin to plan? How do we know what is required? Then these are allegations that there's a price variation between provinces and between public and private sector. There's different provinces that equipment is different, same equipment at different sizes. It remains an allegation for now because we need to still investigate that as we try to investigate the issue of pricing. What the strategy then tries to do, we're looking at putting cost reduction strategies. Some of the areas that we could explore is bulk buying discount, for instance. Because currently, if we buy each hospital buys its own, we could find that actually on the whole of the country, maybe we are buying maybe 30, 40, 50 x-rays. If we were to buy them, we could actually buy them and reduce cost. But if I even take simple technologies such as bulk manometers, we could actually buy them in bulk and save how much more. We also need to restructure the procurement processes. We are trying to already do that, meaning we are trying to analyze the procurement system and acquisition system, and we need to restructure strategic sourcing and forming of partnerships in the physical area. We also need to try and develop mutually beneficial relationship with the health technology industry. Currently, we all are in the same country, but there is no proper engagement. And I'll give an example. We recently had were approached by a particular company which is trying to estimate the demand. It says, okay, if we just to help them and give them the best norm, not best norm, the yes, enough, but to say within the next 10 years, where are we going, where are hospitals going to be built and so forth. They actually manufacture some of the equipment, they are very good, but low tech equipment. They say if they knew that they could manufacture, they could plan and project what is coming, and that way it could also assist and in the end, it would save us cost as the public sector, because if we work well with industry, they know when to project or how to project and what to buy when, so that they know maybe what should be bought in bulk and so on. But that's just, those are some of the areas we need to address. We need to strengthen BEE. The reason why I'm saying that currently we've got challenges. In fact, I think we're going to get to the intervention. Treasury, which runs some of the transversal tenders, has indicated that they just have a concern. It seems like there's a lot of funding. In our situation, we find that you find state companies having tenders and they have to come in with the machine and they produce the same machine, but it's three different companies. But what this could do are issues of it may drive the cost and so forth, but those are things that need to be structured carefully and structured properly. And issues of capacity, we need to build capacity, because we don't want to say we transform and we've got an industry, we've got many people, but only to find that the previous disadvantaged groups are at the low end of the market, low tech and so forth, and there's a higher complexity in terms of complexity than I said, we don't have. So it's what goes into that technology. Currently, if you look for maintenance, you want to say how much is being spent on maintenance in this country, and you can't tell them because it's under the same, it's under goods and services, and goods and services, they are selling them. So if you are able to just track and say, okay, this is what maintenance on medical devices, then we are able to also tell whether we are spending enough on them, because if you don't maintain, we also run into problems. Those are two graphs which talk to the technology industry. Remember we said we need to start building capability. This was on bandages and so forth. The trade balance, if you look at this blue line, which is the export, and the red lines are imports. But if you look at this area, there was a time when we could say at least there was, we didn't have a deficit. What we were exporting and what we were importing was about the same, so it's fine. But as time goes by, our export has grown and reduced. And the import has grown, which means there's something we haven't done as a country in terms of assisting our industry. If you look at this one, some of the high-tech instrument appliances, our export has just remained at a very low level. If you look at this site, it's just done really much. We bought this from the Department of Trade and Industry, and they'll say, no, it could have just been mistake. But the export or the imports have grown, they continue to grow. And again, you wonder what's happening, why is it that our imports are growing at such a high rate, whereas our exports are so low. But the painful thing is that if you look at some of the high-tech, the test stand, it started in South Africa and was in technology around the UK, but it was not supported by the country at a government level because we need to take a focus beyond it. And it went, it was taken up by the British and it grew, it comes back to us at a very, very high cost. But the point is we do have capacity and capability, and if we have a focused attention on this, we have defined in technology, trade and industry, treasury to some extent, we could actually begin supporting our local industry. Strategic area or objective number four on technology management. What challenges there, let's now talk to technology that we now already have in our hospitals. That's why we begin looking at issues of maintenance. What do you do with the equipment once it's off? We've got very low maintenance rates, which including the budget. Our maintenance budget, in fact, is one of the first things we take when we have a budget shortfall. And we tend to fix equipment as and when it breaks. And I don't think we want to do that. I don't think we do that even with our cars. And so we cannot then do it with our equipment in our hospital. We outsource a lot, but studies that we did in the past showed that actually outsourcing costs public sector 8 times higher than having your own in-house technician. So it means if you build your own capacity, which doesn't take long, if you build them, if you remunerate them properly and just try to sustain their skills, you could actually be saving a lot, or we could be saving a lot. There's high equipment downtime, plus or minus 25% of our equipment is not working. Now when you say downtime, it could be that the machine is down because it's not serviced, maybe it left a valve or it left very minor things, but the machine generally is not working. And then low technology management baseline, I didn't bring the graph of the study you see. Yeah, but if you take a composite number of areas that you need to do, of things that you need to do, you see how where we went as a country. Clinical engineering is deteriorating in the country. And the depth of clinical engineering skills for high vacancy rates, and there's no investment in health technology, human resource development. Just maybe if I can quickly go to the next slide, which shows you where we are. If you look at the blue bar, that is what we should be having in the service in public hospitals if we actually maintain our equipment the way it should be. And as I said, these are just technicians. I'm not even talking about engineers. Technicians. buying space, and what they have on their staff, the current staff establishment. So it means, in fact, if they were to fill the post without even creating new posts as per they would be here. But that is something we are currently addressing. I'll explain just briefly when we get to the intervention. But the intervention, we said we need to optimize maintenance. We need to make sure we begin looking at in-house capacity. But obviously, we also agree that we will not be able to have capacity to deal with all the equipment. There's some of the high tech which has to be done purely by the suppliers. But even those suppliers have to be highly trained. But in other countries, you do find them having an engineer maybe in the hospital who's able to liaise and communicate with the company. They tell you that they're troubleshooting, they tell you what to do. But what this does also reduces your cost, because you already have someone in-house who knows exactly what is wrong, as opposed to the current situation where you just send a machine to whoever and they just charge you or cost you as much, or charge you as much as they want, because you don't have capacity to even monitor whether the work that's done is of good quality and whether in fact they really did what they should have done. I'll give you an example. We had one of the hospitals, we had human engineers at that point. They went and the x-ray in that hospital had not been functioning for more than a year. And when they went to check it, they found that it was only a fuel which cost 150 rand at that time. So the point is, we've got this equipment which is very good, very expensive and very required in that hospital, but it stays for more than a year and you don't have capacity to check. Whereas if you've got good capacity in-house, you're able to tell that no, it's really a minor thing that you can quickly do and attract. We are reviewing currently the structure of clinical engineering. We also are trying to address clinical engineering workshops. In fact, TG has said she wants us to tell as a matter of agent what the status of workshops in provinces is, where the workshops are, whether we've got sufficient, and those workshops are they properly, do they have proper skills, do they have good equipment and everything, and that's that we need to do urgently so that you can begin addressing that even as part of the revitalization plan. As I said, we've got this nationwide capacity building drive. We've already started training technicians with funding of technology. We will soon be meeting with universities that train biomedical engineers. That should be West, UCT, Pretoria, as well as Botswana, to have a comprehensive capacity building for the country so that we know what we take. Because the problem has also been that even in universities, it's not a growing field because there hasn't been demand for it. But now, as a country, if we plan it properly, there will be sufficient demand. And we also will have to work at some point with the private sector because they poach a lot and we don't want them to poach. They must come into the court to say, okay, what do you need as a country? Where do you take this? I'm not going to go into the strategic goals, but that is what is in the strategy. I've just gone zoomed in on the intervention for things that you are doing, which are practical measures to address. I showed you this. The other area is technology assessment. I've got three more areas. Two more areas. Technology assessment. We've got, remember I said we've got more of a technology push. It's not a pull to say this is what we need, but it's just we've got an influx of technology which grows at a rapid rate. Just an example, that was some years ago, in fact, FDA registered 28,000 new devices in that year. In South Africa, we've got some of the medical aid companies which actually do some assessment, and they also are registering very high new technologies, new devices. But what that causes is the problem of idea of what we are talking about. You've got more than 5,000 genetic entities, more than a million brand models and sizes, more than 10,000 manufacturers. We, however, don't know how many we have in South Africa. That's one of the areas we're trying to address urgently. 1,400 technical equipment products and so forth, but the point being made is there is so much. And how do you know which is best and which is good quality and which offers value for money? And that is what health technology assessment addresses. Because with this, we sometimes, I'm sure you know with your cell phone, it's got, I'm sure you use only maybe possibly even 10% of its functionality. It can do so many things. But I can confess, I literally use mine to call. But you can send SMS, you can send internet, you can do so much. And we do the same with medical equipment. We want to buy the highest, the latest, and you just use this much. So it's those things that you need to say, what offers value for money. But at the same time, it offers very good opportunities to improve our healthcare. And if you manage it well, we could actually buy, it could be very, very expensive, but if you look at the functionality, it could do far much more, and in the end, you save. And if you have a proper technology assessment system, it will also assist with our, not just planning, but rapid technology intake of the best technologies that offer value for money. There are challenges of over-servicing and perverse incentives in the use of technology. The example would be, in some instances, we had that doctors have shares to medical, to MRI, and their returns on that investment is how many patients they transfer or they refer to that MRI. So the more patients you send, the more money you get. But what does that do to the patient? South Africa is known to have the highest rate of ovarian infection. Is it because that's what the country needs, or is it because of how or of various practices? But there are those challenges. Lack of comprehensive technology scanning mechanism. We don't know what's about to come and what is about to be offered. And as a result, we do risk in solid technology that will soon, maybe a year or 2 years, be taken out of service and you're no longer a spare part and you're no longer able to access service for that. Whereas if we know what's happening, we are able and then we prevent issues of technology dumping into the problem. But at least we should know that maybe in a year's time this is coming, so maybe let me not buy this now. Let me buy it a year later. The main intervention there is to finalize the technology assessment model. Because, as I said, you will find various institutions in the country that do it, but there have been calls to say, let us have governments leading in this because they want to make sure that it is beyond the approach, but also government has to lead. And it will also help a lot with driving down the cost of healthcare. We need to start working urgently with the country for medical schemes on this one. Because the cost of, if you look at, because I think hospitals contribute about 30% of the cost of healthcare, and if it's a hospital, a large aspect of this is medical devices. How much is medical or medical devices contributing to? Last one just takes us briefly to issues of technology safety and medical device regulations, which I'm not going to talk about because maybe at some point we'll address that. But this was just showing some of the dangers and problems that we have. It's not necessarily in South Africa, but this is showing that this is what happens when you don't maintain medical devices properly. So this was largely a result of poor maintenance, poor user training, poor equipment selection. Those are all the problems we also have, and that is what our strategy is aimed at addressing. This is another one which largely is a factor of poor user training on medical devices. So what we then have to do with regards to regulations, we have to regulate in three areas. The first area is market availability, issues of classification, safety issues. There are global harmonization standards and guidelines which we already are working with. But data reporting of adverse events and those things, so that we are able to manage and know and set a threat and safety issue so that you can address them as a matter of agents as and when they occur. And those are just some of the areas that the strategy seeks to address. The strategy will soon be published, approved by the National Health Council now. And we will be briefing the portfolio committee if so required on the particular cases as and when required. And thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Members, we said we are not going to cooperate on this one, so we will ask them to call us on the next presentation. Once they are going on with that, I think I need to remind members that we are dealing with the National Department of Health, where they do practice and policy. So our engagement should be at that level. We know very well that most of the work is actually done in the government, but we are engaging the National Department of Health. What I'm getting here is that they have made a diagnosis as to where are the challenges, and they've got a strategy of handling that. So this is the presentation that we're getting, the challenges and everything done. This is the strategy that we think that we can handle that. You know, in the department, I think most of the money goes to customers. The second area where most of the money goes is actually that, which is part of the device, as I saw on the definition. But I think the third biggest area where it is for the cost is the device. And looking at these other two that I've talked about, the first one being personal and the second one being class, I think they are at a certain level in the department. Not forgetting that we are trying to lower the administration, to bring down the administration so that people can be at a professional level. But you are at a certain level as far as personnel, and you are at a certain level as far as class. I'm not sure whether we should be like, are you at the same level, knowing that most of the money goes there. Which makes it not surprising that you've got these challenges that I've seen. And then this part probably refers to what we always talk about, the primary healthcare and the referral system. Where we would know, we would ask ourselves, do you really need an MRI scan in Kokodana? Obviously, you don't need, but you need to have a proper referral system that is the significant amount of Kokodana. But how to do the test so that if that person needs a scanner or an MRI scanner, how to do the test that person? That person, so that you can have the MRI scan as every one of us in South Africa needs. And the last one is on the regulation. I think as parliamentarians, we make laws. There's a reason why you make those laws as parliament. But now the regulations get done by the department. But sometimes we still not to know what is on the regulation. And sometimes we find that what is on the regulation is a little bit not going along with what the law says. So sometimes it is the officers that as members we want to speak the regulation, whether they talk to what we wanted when we actually put up the law. Okay.
Thank you, Chair. Good morning, honorable members. Just before I started the presentation, what I try to do here is to pick on those questions that were asked. But the response to those pertain to all issues relating to the health of persons in the country. For instance, the question I addressed a question around the state, and that pertains to all the governments. So I will just try and expand, you know, in each of those areas. Maybe before I start on that one, again, is to say that the issue about the HR plan, which I talked to towards the end of the presentation. However, what needs to be taken into consideration initiative that has been recently implemented late last year that will go a long way towards addressing fundamentally what has happened in the chapter. And those are policy imperatives around the re-engineering of primary healthcare, the issue around the national health insurance, because even though it is a financing mechanism, but it basically forces the restructuring of the whole health system, both public and private. And there is work done with the National Department of Higher, with Department of Higher Education and Training around university training. There is work that has been done by the Academy of Sciences looking at clinical research, and there is also the debate around the possible addition of another medical school or a school of health sciences in the country. So all those issues, you know, have to culminate in a very, you know, broad and specific, you know, plan. And most of that work is ongoing. Now, there was a question that was raised by the proposition that OSD has not made an impact in the truth case because the interest rates are still high. And the question was whether the department has assessed the impact in other problems. Well, the question of assessment and the terms of reference have been finalized for an in-depth assessment of the OSD system in the country. Our view is that the system has impacted positively in all the provinces. However, OSD should not, and if the state continues to give OSD equals money. Our readings emphasize again what I re-emphasized at this committee last year, to say that OSD has got four elements that I will talk to later on. And our own, you know, assessment, the meeting of the National Human Resource Committee last week, and the report that we got from provinces is that some of the perverse activities that were taking place between the provinces have actually been nullified. Provinces were poaching from each other, you know, violating the public service regulation in a desperate bid to poach, you know, professionals from other provinces. That has come to a stop. The vacancy rates in Free State are varying. In fact, in the nursing field, they vary between 7 and 10%. 10% being far more of the highly specialized, and the 7% being at the level of the nursing assistant. If you look at doctors, the highest is about 24%, which is senior doctor, specialist, and so on. And the 9% is more around, you know, the medical officers. Now, what we've got to bear in mind about, you know, the Free State is that there are various challenges that it is facing. It's got severe financial difficulties. As a result, the Department of Health in the province is being managed together with the Premier's office in terms of managing the field workforce and the prioritization that I'm putting there. So the issue then about, you know, whether they would be able to fill in all the posts that they have in the light of various budgetary constraints, you know, the province has taken a decision that they would prioritize. I think the other one that we've got to take in consideration is that doctors are not in abundant supply, even globally, especially at a specialist level, which is why if you look at the re-engineering of the of primary healthcare, one of the issues that is being looked at there is effective referral, you know, so that we move away from thinking that we would have a doctor in every clinic, every locality, because that is not possible. Even the output capacity of our own institution, you know, is severely lacking for a number of reasons. However, the recruitment of foreign doctors remains an open option on government-to-government agreements. However, even that gets limited by the availability of funding, because once you bring those doctors, you bring them on treaty permits, which are basically between the government you must guarantee the salary and the end thing that our doctors do. You must guarantee accommodation, which we do not guarantee for our own. You must make sure that we transport them, the question of schools and so on and so on. These, I mean, are the issues that we have to deal with the recruitment of doctors from Tunisia, from Iran and so on. There was the issue around the potential student nurses. The question of training, you know, in terms of an act of parliament is a function that is dedicated to the South African Nursing Council. They keep a register of all nursing schools in the country that are registered to train, and any school that is set up has to register also with the Department of Education as an education and training their facility. So what we then do is that at a provincial level, where most of the applicants, you know, apply, the information is given to students that they need to check with the South African Nursing Council, because it is the one that does accreditation. Some get accredited, but you might find that in 3 years' time after an inspection that their accreditation is removed. So it's the Nursing Council that keeps that register. Then they will inform us and also inform the Department of Higher Education. We've had many instances where students have actually inquired from the National Department as to whether I've applied to this school is registered, and what we do is refer that to the Nursing Council. Secondly, where there are cases that are reported of nursing schools, backyard nursing schools that have been set up, we also report to the Nursing Council. The other avenue that we dealt with was where the health and welfare center would actually, you know, support training, short-term training, areas like, you know, with community health workers and so on, where you found that people that get, you know, supported to do that training parade as nursing schools. And we've actually closed that loop by ensuring that whoever, you know, approaches the health and welfare system with that, you know, kind of request, that able to refer both to the Nursing Council and to the Department of Health so that we can be able to manage that. Now back to the OSP story, there was an issue about supplementaries of OSP. Just an overview, the OSP system was set in place to solve a particular problem. Let me just recap what the major problem. Before 1994, doctors and dentists were always, you know, migrating in and out of the country. And for those two professions, they are very high migratory, you know, profession, just like soldiers. And wherever, you know, their services are required, they will go. The South African doctors that work in the most difficult conditions in the northern parts of Canada, work conditions in terms of the climate and all that. And the reason for that is because of remuneration that we can never do. However, they go for short periods. After 1994, nurses started migrating the huge numbers, first to Saudi Arabia, then to the UK. And many others, you know, were moving. Now, there were numerous reasons for that. One was remuneration, one was the conditions under which they worked. Nurses in particular had a glass ceiling at level 8, chief professional nurse. You reach that level, you know that you're on that level forever. You know. There were no clear career paths in place. As a result, you found many nurses moving out of clinical facilities to administration just to earn 500 rands more or 1,000 rands more. So what we then did was to look at how best can government attract and retain health professionals within the service. And the focus was on retaining them in the clinical area, which is why we did not really spend a lot of time looking at the administrative or management. And we benchmarked, we look all over the world what was taking place, but that was, you know, located in the public expenditure review by DPSC in 2006, just to make sure that whatever we're doing is in line with what is done across the country. And there were a number of countries that were looked at. The UK was one of those, and we certainly looked at the National Health Service in the UK as to how they structured the remuneration capacity. And we then decided to divide it into three main groups. The first one was to deal with nursing, simply because all our health facilities, primary right up to tertiary, nurses are very, very critical. Then we said, if you improve the remuneration, the experience that the department had in 1996, where there was a much improvement in the salary of doctors, was that if you attend to remuneration only and you don't address the other aspects, within a short time, we got dissatisfied. As a result, by 1999, the same medical officers were complaining that they are earning too little. So what we then did was to combine four elements. The first one is salary. The second one is career path. So that, I mean, in fact, there were new career categories that we put in place. You'll remember that nursing education never featured. In fact, it features very, very highly now for nursing. The career progression, which basically means the speed with which you know you'll be able to progress, linked to performance management. Now, the first one and the third one, salary and career progression, are basically workplace, you know, I mean, workplace related. The last one, performance management, will really depend on the profession. Because it is the seniors in that particular profession that can performance manage their own health. I cannot be performance managed by an environmental health officer if I'm a medical doctor. Because you need somebody within that profession to do that. Which basically means then you need seniors to be there, to be able to supervise and be able to do community performance. Career progression depends on the individual. Like I'm saying with the last bullet, the OSD places the responsibility for promotion on the health professionals by rewarding good performance. We no more have a one-size-fits-all. That now we're going to improve, I mean, to increase the salary level for staff nurses or medical officers. No. You actually have to perform so that you are able to, I mean, to go through. Of course, one of the things that the OSD has done is severely limited the power of the province to violate. For instance, we had a situation where you find that when people finish community service in the medical field, one would be appointed directly to a chief medical officer. Meanwhile, the same time they were doing intention to get that performing bonus similarly is in another province, but is actually, I mean, employed at the National Trust of Medical Office. So we actually, I mean, dealt with that because when people try to do that, that takes it out. And then we're able to see the fact and we start checking as to what the problem is. Maybe one, also another aspect around, I mean, the growth. It's unfortunate that, I mean, many people are looking at it as a salary linked, you know, I mean, what we still need to do with, and we'll try to engage with the professional associations around the performance management by clinician. This is also linked to ROW, remunerative work outside public service. Some people are sarcastically saying it's now remunerative work outside private service. Because you get people that are actually almost full time in private sector, but are working part time in the public health sector, being paid full salary, you know, by the public health sector. Strategies to increase the number of doctors and nurses. The current planning framework, which is the 2006, you know, framework, put forward some numbers, and those numbers were indicative numbers, provided certain things were addressed, and those proved to be helpful. One is the capacities of universities to train more, due to reasons of financial support, infrastructure, education. Because we don't have a shortage of people that want to study in most of the health sciences. But the problem is that in terms of accreditation, there are certain educator student ratios that need to be met. For instance, if we were to look at medicine, at specialization, if you've got people that are specializing in obstetrics and gynecology, the ratio I think is one trainer is to two student registrar. But if you look at psychiatry, the consulting discipline, it can increase from 1 to 4 or 1 to 5. So which means if you're going to train in the surgical discipline, you're going to need more of the superiors of specialists who actually have to be academic full time to be able to do that. Now, this is some of the challenges that then retard, you know, the ability of medical school to train more. If you look at nursing, there's also a ratio in knowing what you have. The less educators you have, the less students you are going to progress in good. So one of the strategies in terms of the nursing strategy of 2008 was to engage with the nursing council, the education institutions and the professional association so that there can be educator development programs in place so that more educators can be trained. In fact, now no nurse can offer education and training without having done, you know, a nursing education, having studied nursing education. Just to make sure that people who teach are people that have been trained. And I must say that in the health sciences, educating is different from general education. Because for you to educate, you've got to be hands-on. I can't teach people how to examine a liver without me having a patient and actually showing to them this is how you examine. You can't theorize about the examination of a knee unless you've got a knee in front of you. So which then means that links to education and training, the facilities that are necessary for training are critical. You cannot teach psychiatry unless you've got access to a psychiatry hospital. So these are some of the issues I mean that I challenge. And I think in the past, the issue of midwifery has come up to say that I mean, there's been serious challenges around that. And one of the challenges we have was really people that are trained in midwifery and have access, you know, to those individuals. So all I'm trying to say is that while the strategies were put in place, you know, in 2006, but the reality is that there were certain habits. The major one, I think, is financial. Because all institutions have we had an increase in the budget, you know, for training. There's been an intervention made for the training of registrars because you need specialists to train those at a lower level. You can't take people at the same level to train registrars. You need specialists to do that. Now, there's been a reform of the health profession training and development grant, which has made it possible for the academic hospitals and to get that are attached to universities to look at increasing, you know, the training of registrars by about 1,000. And that will assist, you know, in improving, I mean, in the output. But also, the flip side of that is that we have to make sure that there are retained within the public sector. Which is why if you look at the packages, remuneration packages in terms of OSD, you know, chief specialists and so on, they've actually gone beyond a million. And if you include committed overtime, some of them, I mean, they're on packages of about 1.5, 1.6 million. In terms of the nursing training, the refurbishment or river transition of public nursing colleges in the 2011 and 12 budget, which was announced in the State of Physician Address, we completed last year the audit of both public and private training colleges, and of course the responsibility of government is for the public training colleges. And that is actually arising from that report, which I'm sure the DG will be Like I said earlier on, the several areas of the 2016 framework that were implemented. And I did allude to this in the presentation to the portfolio committee last year. There was the system that I talked about, the nursing strategy, and certainly there's going to be advances made on that one following the nursing funding that is going to be held, I think, in April this year. Clinical associates, we've had the first graduate from World Health Institute University, and all 23 of them were employed by the Eastern Cape Department of Health. We are expecting about 180 clinical associates to graduate this year from World Health Institute and the University of Pretoria. So there's a remarkable, you know, progress on that. We revised the policy on the recruitment of foreign health professionals, closing some of the loopholes that were there. And I think there are recent, you know, advances by the Department of Home Affairs in terms of managing, you know, immigration is going to assist us a lot, you know, in that particular area, to also be able to deal with the challenges that we have around people that, you know, practice beyond what are registered coming to do. I'm sure you probably remember the issue around the so-called focus on health. There's been harmonization of policy across the province, especially around, you know, organizational development, around HR policies and all that. And we've contributed significantly to the World Health Organization around the management of global migration. Because South Africa has always been characterized as a receiving and, you know, and central country, in that we have our own that go out and the others that are coming in, and how do we manage that? And I think our experience, you know, informed the WHO code of practice significantly. And in that instance, we would release the agreement, memorandum of agreement between ourselves and the UK as a base document. Now, a big problem we have is the remunerative work outside public sector. This policy is invading the Public Service Act, Section 30, Part 1 and Part 2, going on. Subsection 1 says no employee shall perform or engage himself or herself to perform remunerative work outside his or her employment in the relevant department, except with the written permission of the Executive Authority of the department. It further says the Executive Authority shall at least take into account whether or not the outside work could reasonably be expected to interfere with or impede the effective or efficient performance of the employee's function in the department or constitute a contravention of the Code of Conduct contained in Section 41, Subsection 1. Now, this at the clinical level is provided, it extends, I mean, a right to the public service. However, the MEC has to give express permission based on considerations that are contained in there. Basically, what it means is that if somebody applies for remunerative work outside of the public, firstly, it's going to be determined that it is necessary for the person to do so. Secondly, it will be done after hours, which means after work. This function is normally dedicated in many provinces to CEOs at facility level as part of their HR management dedication to avoid a situation where all these requests are made to the head office. Because this is only the CEO at facility level who know what the demands are. However, the experience we have is that this is a serious, you know, challenge. Part of the Act also says that if the employee requests, you know, the permission and a reasonable time elapses without a response, failure does not take place. What is the failure is the management of power, which means that ensuring that people are at work at the and the project that work and only go to their practices after your work has been finished with the data on the platform. Now, this is not an easy area to be managed. In that, I remember some years back we had to deal with a situation in either a hospital in Bulwa, where 5 obstetricians resigned. There was a number of reasons, I mean, like, but the major one was the objection to being basically asked to clock when they said to come in the morning, you sign a register, you go out, you sign a register. You don't manage professionals, but they respect. They respect. So our approach was to say there's got to be close monitoring of the work they do, to see whether they do what rounds, they do theater, and so on, so on. Because the reality is that you are not going to give them a country clock when they come in or not. And if you insist on that, they do what they did in Bolivar, they resign and mass on the same day, and you have a country. Fortunately, we managed to intervene and they managed to come back to us. Now, with the other ones, it's the same thing. Some of the seniors will actually come in at work in the morning, spend 1 hour, and leave. Go away. As a result, you find the juniors coming and being on their own. And I think this is an issue, I mean, it's not an, I mean, a purely administrative issue. It's an issue that we raise with the South African Medical Association, because many of the councils are their members. So we've got to try and deal with that. And I know that it's an issue that the minister, you know, has wanted to. Part of the challenge we have is that people claim more hours than they actually work. For instance, if somebody is claiming that they work in an average of 15 hours commuted, I mean, over time, it basically means that, I mean, they're working 56 hours. Because, I mean, they don't have a 40-hour week as a statutory, you know, requirement. Now, with 56 hours in a week, how much time do they then have to spend to our work? You know, it means that they are taking time from the state. And this is what I mean at the end of the process. We certainly need to reconsider starting, I mean to consider starting our work, especially at the senior level within the medical profession, medical and dental profession, in the light of the high remuneration package of other entities and so forth. Like I indicated earlier on, people are very senior. Some of them are on 1.4, 1.5 million dollar packages. But they still do have work, you know, on, which is an unlimited kind of. Now, one would say that this has to be managed at a facility level. Yes, it's got to be managed at a facility level. You cannot be able to manage it anymore. But what we are hoping for is that we'll be able to. That is the address both administratively and also politically, because it's an issue that, you know, is quite rampant, you know, across, you know, the country. And those are the issues that I picked up, and that's what I was able to expand on some of the elements. And thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you,
Dr.
Mathias.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
you. Writing down whatever that you want to engage the department on. I think this is the time for us to engage.
same people who are not implementing whatever is because they don't know. And they may even very old feel to confident because we at Bara know the knowledge. We at Bara used to say that as the way we will use it, the issue of zero cut. Because I know that anything is dynamic or maybe in China, that the health is dynamic. Itself. How are you going to really see to it that other people who were not involved or who were not exposed are really going to? Looking at the shortage of nurses, shortage of personnel at the facility. Again, I'm saying that technology doesn't come very cheaply. Looking at the budget, whenever we talk, we will always say that the department is underfunded. How do we really think that we are going to achieve that with the history of us being underfunded? Then on the next presentation, I think Honorable Doctor has already said the main thing of the three stage was saying it was not around the vision process. It was saying that it was used, it was supposed to really help us in recruitment and retention. But because now everybody is almost on the same level. Now the rural people, the people who were in urban cities, who went to rural because of the rural incentive, they are now moving back because, like it or not, there is nothing better than money. And when we talk about OSP, like you have said, it's money related. Yeah, we know that it is saving a certain thing, but the next way is because of money. That is why they are now moving back because of what there is no more difference. I'm a nurse by profession, and I'm really very, very, very needy against it because the way it's been run is not well monitored, well looked at. I work in an intensive in the public public service hospital. When I knock off, I go to a private hospital and went the whole day. When I come back, I'm not as effective as I'm supposed to be because I'm tired. I'm supposed to take a leave because I have to go and rest. I don't rest. I go to work at the private hospital. And at a certain stage, when I'm on leave, I double that. And what I have seen, because I work in the hospital, not only as an ordinary nurse, but even as a manager, you find that at the public hospital, that's where I rest. I cannot rest for private hospital, but I will rest when I come in the morning. Costume room, linen room, all those things. How do we really control this why should I be having two jobs? Meaning that I can, at this time, go and make do it. Is this really correct? And at a certain stage, with doctors, if I don't have needles at my surgery, and there are boxes of needles in the public hospital, what am I doing? the medication, all those things. Can we consider it? I know, I understand whatever you have said, and the last one, when we say that when I don't eat as the employee, it's story, silence means you can go another day. When this doctor is needed in the clinic, he's busy in theater, somewhere during working hours. Can we, that is why I said, Chairperson, it's for the first time that I get this hanging, hating, whatever, because I know what I'm talking about. Thank you.
Have adverse effects on the time it takes to achieve full procurement of systems.
look, I don't know whether technology evolves or if it's a revolution, but in terms of the way it moves. What I was wanted to find out is whether there is a monitoring mechanism on monitoring development as far as technology is concerned. And the so that they can the department can be able to intervene on time and be able to highlight new devices or new ideas which have come onto the table, because almost every week there will be something new in terms of technology, and if we are not up to date, we sometimes buy old equipment. The other thing of concerning the role of institutions themselves in terms of asset registers and maintenance, because somehow we have to take responsibility. We cannot be the responsibility of even the provision department, because the manager of the institution must take full responsibility as far as the assets which are within their institution. And that also brings me to the issue of technicians and engineers, development of engineers and technicians, which has got to do with generally the whole issue of human resources development within the health sector. I have always raised this thing, the health sector. What is their contribution to solving this particular problem? I did ask that we must have them. I mean, to provide health professionals, you can't provide learnership. They should be more creative in the manner in which they contribute in terms of providing buzzers, in terms of providing, particularly in the field of technicians. They have got to be able to do something. And they can't just produce for the sake of producing. They must be able to fill the gap. They must be able to serve the needs of the country in terms of providing the necessary technicians. And the other issue of central buying or bulk processing, I think Honorable Waters has discussed that the vendor there is the delays and bureaucracy which might be created, that it might be, you might be doing it in good faith, but it might have got, what do you call it, unintended consequences of this. The issue of shortages of staff is a good thing. I understand it's the premier is involved. I'm from the Free State, and the issue of deployment and nepotism, that sometimes you think that there's going to be help, but because in the Free State, posts are already allocated before they get advertised. I don't know how I'm going to be kept on this, but I know for sure, because I'm from there. I know that posts, especially where the Premier's office is involved, that posts get allocated. Each post has got its own pattern. You apply, that's a waste of time, because everybody in the department will know this post is so and so, including cleaners. From the cleaners upwards, it's not an accident where you think it's any class or a professional. It's from there, including municipality. So I really got demoralized when you say the cleaners involved, nothing will happen. The other thing, the experience of IT is that if you want to balance supply of human resources in any particular industry, because you flood it. Sometimes when you flood an industry with skilled people, if you bring the balance in terms of salaries, in terms of competition and all that. And that's why I'm really convinced that if the health sector or all other sectors can play their own, they can be able to supply. South Africa, we say we have got high unemployment, but we have got shortages of skill. But we have got money in terms of the sector. There's something wrong. We look at the metrics last year. which they are so good, why can't we be able to produce more people, just people pass at that particular rate? There might be question marks about them, but I'm not interested in the question marks about the result. But the fact is, something has happened. And how do we take this idea? A lot of, I mean, at the beginning of the year, so many children who have got very good marks complain that they don't get bursary, they don't get support. But you find that government, even the department, provincial department, provide bursary. But what happens with that? The issue of OSD, the truth of the matter is that the communication, I mean, there was tried by doctors, and the impression in the minds of everybody is that it's about money. So I think the issue of communication of what OSD really is a problem. And the issue of performance management, how do you ensure that there's no problem? It's all right to say their promotion is in their own head, but the human nature is to say, if they are not clear objective criteria, the human factor comes in, and that's where people get demoralized, where some people bypass others. I'm not going to talk about moonlighting, because I think it has been addressed. And the issue of foreign doctors, we only rely on the leadership to say, what about Zimbabwe doctors, qualified Zimbabwe doctors who are here and who cannot get employed? They don't want to, they are not expecting you to have a contract with the Zimbabwe government. They are here. And Zimbabwe is an example. There might be a lot of other doctors. Not the ones which have been arrested by the Hawks. Qualified, legitimate doctors there, you might find them. How do you deal with people like that who are in the country and probably they are refugees?
I think we'll just take this question after honorable one. After that, we'll just have two. For 5 minutes, and then we come. Okay, Memor?
My question is based on the question and answer sheet that we have received here. I just want to inquire on the second question on page 3 about the re-engineering, how far is everything in terms of planning? I can see here we've been given the National Department of Health where people travel to Brazil. Just to, because this happened around June, just to have an idea from June to now, I mean, what is the department's plan to Brazil model? Are we going the Brazilian way? What does that mean? I know the community is free to go somewhere to, also check what is happening and external access. But I must say, I'm really disappointed that we changed from one thing to another without even trying very hard to fix whatever problem we have in the current system. I mean, the approach that we're using now, primary care, I think it's a good step. It suits us very well. The only thing is the problem of, the staffing, the conditions of work. Because we're going to take the Brazil model, but if we don't clean our house, if the house is dirty, but people keep on changing in terms of who's living there, I mean, nothing will happen. The Brazilian model as well, we'll copy it, but if we still have specialties, if we still have a lack of equipment, the register not being there as well, if everything is, the system itself, it remains chaotic, we just move you from one, wrong thing to the next wrong thing. I'll call them wrong because nothing seems to work. And then on the OSD issue, one of the reasons why we had OSD to some extent was to attract staff. That was one thing that was, spoken about everywhere when OSD was introduced, even though it's performance based, we thought it would help us. And I remember there was a time when there was an argument that since OSD has been implemented, we have had people coming into the system. But I didn't read any research on that or whatever, but you would imagine that if that is the case,
why don't we see the difference in terms of service delivered at operational level? You know, why don't we, I mean, it's like things are getting worse. Patients are complaining, the hospital, there's so much mismanagement that is going on. You know, it's like things are getting worse, but the department is trying so much to come up with programs, different programs, to try and, you know, improve the services. So I'm not sure, especially when you talk to the system issue, that it's not about the OSD, it's about what the department has to do in terms of increasing the numbers. I actually would love to see research done on this issue of OSD, the service delivery, you know, just for the department to have something for me, you know, by a credible institution. That's my suggestion. So that we know that things that you guys come up with or together you come up with, they work or they don't work. So that when you move to the next one, or maybe instead of moving, trying to fix the very one that is not working, then you know exactly where the problems are, something like that. And then the issue of AWOPS, I agree with all the members who said what I said, but I think when you look at AWOPS, don't just look at it at the senior level. Look at it overall. If you spread it for everyone, I think that will work. But remember, when you spread it, make sure your conditions of employment or working environment for those nurses or doctors or everyone are really conducive. Because at times it's not about financial issues. At times it's about conditions of employment. This, I know for sure, because we did a small research long time ago at Susan Paragona when we do hospital management. And some of the issues, honestly, are people think like, we don't have a few rooms. You know what I mean? So people feel better when they're at private, because immediately if you're time for tea, you sit down, you realize there's a nice house, there's milk, there's tea. Those are simple things that other people feel that they make them feel at home when they're at work, and it makes them productive in a way. So if you stress it, please stress it for everyone, not only for the senior, because you know what, we don't want to be the next, what is it, the next other African country. Okay. And then, with your plan, your National Human Resource Plan, please, when you do your plan, include the allied and therapeutic groups. You know, most of the time you find that everything is done for the nurses, doctors, but these people don't work, I mean, alone as a two groups. You know, a doctor, I'm sorry to say, today's doctors rely on x-ray for them to diagnose. I'm sorry to say that. So, I mean, clinically in the past, doctors would tell, you know, by, what is that thing? When the patient comes in? Screening, for instance, during screening, you know, that, yeah, this, you know, this must be, you know, blah, blah, blah. But now doctors send everything to x-ray, you know. So, I think when you do, the interest on the other hand, please do it proportionally, you know, so that people, especially the radiographers. Maybe because I'm a radiographer, I don't know. But do it proportionally, then it will match. Because you fix this side, but it lacks this side. So the patient waiting times are still going to be the same. Then it's delivery is still going to be, you know, negative or whatever. So just try and balance, just like the pharmacist, you know. Unfortunately for health, there's nothing like, okay, to some extent there might be certain groups prioritized. But when you look at it as delivery, it's a chain. You cannot break anyone. You cannot have 10 doctors, you know, 3 nurses, 1 doctor, 1 pharmacist. Somewhere the chain breaks or stops, you know, something like that. So look at it that way. It's like a ball trying to, you know, shape it in one uniform here. And then the polygon, I'm not sure if you've got that document or paper. And then the provision of, provisional top-level revised organizational structure. I'm not sure if you've got something. We've given through documents, I don't see anything, I'm not sure. And then the human resource plan. And the commercial, irrespective of the problems that have been alluded in one of the questions here, I think the department still needs to have a plan to say, this is our, even if we call it a wish plan, it's fine to say, because under the statistics made to say, they see so many patients, blah, 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 this is what we think we should have. I don't know, I don't have any plan yet. But I've got these questions and whatever. I'm not sure if this is the plan. Oh, okay. But in case there's no plan, I think we need a plan. Just to say, you know, based on the number of patients that you see, something like that. Because, okay. I see all these questions.
where you it alluded that the problem is with university capacity, something like that, you know. So what I'm saying is that irrespective of whatever other problems are there, if we have our wish human resource plan, I think it will help. And then the final one is the financial management turnaround plan, or you call it the work. Oh, okay. I think it's the next time.
Thank you. We will go to the next. It's good that I'm not a doctor, number one. So the doctor who diagnosed by this week. They will answer for themselves. Why do you tell me? One thing that you did, I think you have remembered to ask for this document from policy. I'm not sure whether it's a policy. They brought it because the member asked for it. I don't think it's a policy of the department that they will go that way. Okay. Okay. Honorable Bidu.
I think they are doing their own things, and then when we come and ask questions, sure what is saying and what are saying.
The more documents you give us, the more questions they're going to be asked.
Going on.
some type of students, you don't mention your husband's name. That's going to be 5 minutes, 5 to 10 minutes, and we come back. Okay,
let's check before we break for tea. There are some questions that are particularly with respect to presentation. The strategy and trends, the HR strategy, the long presentation, the second one is about the finance. We have the